Bookie Beatdown coming at you, Paul, Cody, UFC, Cotter, Sarukian versus Hooker. Decent little fight night here. It's funny when they have the monies, Cody. It's funny how these things work, right?
Yeah, isn't that
if it's
funny?
In the Apex or if it was in like, I don't want to shame any cities or anything like that. So I'm just going to throw out whatever. But like if it was like Fight Night Detroit or like, you know, Des Moines or something like that. We're not getting this type of offer. It's one big fight, one title fight away from being a pay-per-view, frankly, right?
I completely agree. It's absolutely loaded. It just doesn't have that pay-per-view worthy main event. The main event's exactly. A fine main event.
Oh, great.
It would probably be a pay-per-view co-main event, let's say. But yeah, without that little crown jewel, the rest of it is loaded. I mean, we've got top prospects coming in from Russia, top prospects that have not fought in the UFC before that are jumping in. It's amazing. And there's a lot of too good to be true looking favorites. You know, I would love this. Take this card and put it in the United States where I know the FBI are watching. I am all over it. In Qatar, I'm a little bit worried, Paul, because there's a lot of good-looking favorites. And, of course, we're going to have to trust a few of them to do the job.
I kind of disagree, you know, classic me and you disagree on that type of thing. But some of the favorites don't look so good to me. But that's why we're here. That's why we're here to break it down, figure it all out, and might as well start with the main event. We got Armand Sarukian taking on Dan the Hangman Hooker. Armand about a minus 500 favorite to come back, as high as plus 400-ish. I don't know what that plus 430 is, but it's probably not a realistic book. Probably one of those exchanges or something like that. Where are you at with the main event, Cody?
I just think the line's obviously off. I mean, Sarukian probably should be the favorite. He's got the grappling edge. He's younger. The UFC does not like Dan Hooker right now. He's been very vocal. They're looking to just shut him down, and Sarukian's the kind of guy to do that. But it's a five-round fight, Paul. It's a five-round fight in which Dan Hooker theoretically thrives. He's fought five rounds before. He's a guy that tends to pick up some momentum the longer the fight goes. Everybody knows for the first round or two, he's likely going to be getting taken down. But if he can outwork Sarukian, a guy that's not huge on his ground and pound, and a guy that has fatigued in the past. We've seen him gone five rounds one other time. He fought Matheus Gamrot, and a fight he 100% slowed down and the longer it went. Beyond that, he got rocked in his fight against Joaquim Silva, and of course his last fight against Charles Oliveira over a year ago now. He starts to kind of slow down in that one as well. Dan Hooker's no marvel. He's now 35 years old, but he's hell on wheels, and that's the way he's always fought. He's fought guys that are much better wrestlers than him. He's given up a lot of takedowns in the vast majority of his fights, but he keeps working. He's got a decent get-up game. He's got a nasty guillotine choke that he'll threaten with you on lazy shots, and if he can keep the fight standing, he just throws a lot more volume. Again, if this is in the U.S., and you know for sure they're looking at damage as opposed to control time, well, then at minus 500, Sarukian, if he's in a close decision and they are potentially looking at damage, minus 500 is just a really bad number. In Qatar, they probably are going to like what Sarukian's doing. And I kind of think his forward motion, he's got big hands. So like a guy like Matheus Gamrot, he doesn't have the kind of punching power nor the boxing to really do anything to Hooker standing. So he's forced to just shoot the whole time. Jalen Turner wins the first round, but then he's got suspect cardio. Sarukian's not that guy. He'll have control time with his takedowns. He likes to come forward. He's got big power. You've seen him knock out a number of opponents. And with Hooker, I'm not saying he's chinny, but Matheus Gamrot hurt him in the first round. He has been knocked out a few times in the first round in the last number of fights. Maybe the writing's on the wall for 35-year-old all-action guy. And 29-year-old Armand Sarukian, yes, he's been off for a little bit, but conceivably he's getting better. He trains at American Top Team. He's got excellent training partners. He's in a part of the world that likes him and likes his style. I think he ends up winning regardless, but I really don't like this line. So if I can get my tickets intact going into this main event, I don't even hedge it after the first before the fight starts. I hedged this thing after the first round or two. If Hooker's still around and he's suddenly making Sarukian work for these takedowns, like, again, you go back to the Gamrot fight. Gamrot goes 1-for-7 in that third round on takedowns. The longer you can cause these guys to have to shoot and reshoot and mat return and scramble and get back up and then throw some punches and then shoot again. Constant threat of that knee coming up the middle and this guy making you work. He's a dangerous opponent, way more dangerous than the line suggests. But the end result probably is the same. So I got Armand Sarukian, but I'm not loving the number I'm getting here, Paul.
Yeah, minus 500. It's hard to say. There's too much value. These are still lightweights. The most competitive division probably in the world right now. And Hooker's been on a decent little run. But what Sarukian does is typically the path of least resistance against Hooker. Getting those takedowns. He's not going to have to worry. Not going to be like Charles Oliveira, where you got to worry about like a super dangerous guard or anything. Like if you can get Dan Hooker to his back, you're in pretty good shape there. Just you kind of have to hold on. If you're like parlay bro and want to hedge and stuff, like Sarukian's the guy that you plug in there with the intentions of hedging out when right before the fight starts. I know you said live, but sometimes it's hard to get down enough action to do that in live markets. That's so fair. If Hooker even hangs around at like +300, it's like it's the easiest hedge out on fight night. If you were putting a gun to my head, forcing me, like, here's like 12 freaking regional cards this week. Like there is no shortage of action. There is no shortage of -500s that I could play this week. Like they're everywhere, right? So it's like, am I forcing my gut, my hand on this fight at this stage in the week? We'll wait for weigh-ins, everything like that. No. If you put a gun to my head and made me bet one of these sides right now, I'd probably take this +420 on Dan Hooker. But I don't have to bet it. So we will move on. We move on to the co-main event. We got Ian Garry taking on Bilal, what's his name, Muhammad. Ian Garry, a -250 favorite. The comeback on Bilal, +210. I had a Garry right after the event on Saturday. I added Garry to some like parlays, like looking ahead type of thing. He was like -182 or something like that. It's really bloomed up at this point. I don't know if there's too much meat on the bone. I've historically kind of been a bit of an Ian Garry hater. The biggest issue with him is like some of the had questions about his durability along the way, right? Well, yeah, because like Song Kanaan like knocked him down or whatever.
I know, but you watch that,
you remember it. These are things that I concerned about. Well, luckily for him, he's taking on Bilal Muhammad, who couldn't bust a grape. We called it last week with Sean Brady. It's just like, if Bilal Muhammad's knocking you out, watch out for Michael Morales. Thank God for Michael Morales. That was a nice big plus money ticket that came home for the kid right here. But and for you as well. I think Garry's length, footwork, probably even takedown defense is going to be too much for Bilal. I think Bilal's at the end of the road now. What about you?
Yeah, so the best time to bet Ian Garry was just like Paul's saying, right after last week's card, when you dawned on you, holy shit, Bilal Muhammad's wins are aging very poorly. Mm-hmm. So his win, or he fought Jack Maddalena and lost, and then you saw Jack at 50-45 by a guy coming up a weight class, who's the world class, I get it. But so maybe Bilal Muhammad's wrestling's not as good as maybe we thought. His win prior to that, Leon Edwards, for the belt, well, that thing's not looking too good in the rearview mirror. Leon Edwards is likely done. Gilbert Burns is an old man. And then Sean Brady, which was also on last week's card and really did not age all that well. So, yeah, Vicente Luque, prior to that, he went to decision with Vicente Luque. Who goes to decision with Vicente Luque? He's shot to bits as well. So, yeah, I think 37-year-old Bilal Muhammad, it's not like you want to discredit everything that he's done. But, yeah, he fought an older generation of guys, and he used a certain style that was uber effective against them. And the one trap I don't want to fall myself into is that if Bilal, who literally was taking down everybody, 9 on Leon Edwards, and he took down Vicente 5 times and Stephen Thompson 7 times, and even Jack Maddalena, he did manage the 3 takedowns on him. He kind of got away from it in the game plan. He wanted to stand and bang. And then so now sitting at home watching the TV, watching Islam Makhachev use father's plan, kind of what got you the world title in the first place. What are the chances that Bilal comes into this fight now and just decides to strike the whole time? I think he's going to have to fight like a dog on the bone and just pursue takedowns for the entirety of it. Because Ian Garry's 6'3". Ian Garry is a giant guy for this weight class and can wrestle. The thing is that when you say watch Ian Garry versus Shavkat Rakhmonov, Rakhmonov only got him down twice on 10 attempts. And he racked up 11 minutes and 40 seconds of control time, over 25 minutes. Based on up against the cage and able to complete a few takedowns and kind of hold them down. So if Bilal can get takedowns going, he can make this fight close for sure. But it's similar to what we talked about with Michael Morales and Sean Brady, is that your wrestling works against guys that are your size. Leon Edwards clearly doesn't want to wrestle anymore and is at the end of his rope. Gilbert Burns is really not looking to defensively wrestle, and he's at the end of his rope. Jack Maddalena is in the process of trying to learn how to wrestle, And yet he's able to hold you to 3-for-9 takedowns. So a guy like Ian Gary, who's still young, improving, the Rachmaninoff fight, you can see him in real time. He's defending a bunch of take. This kid knows how to wrestle. He gets in quality work. He's longer. He's rangier. I think he's going to have an ability to just kind of outpoint him, but everybody hates Bilal Muhammad, apparently, and so I don't want to.
Everyone hates caught. Ian Gary, though, too.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to get caught betting Ian Gary on a basis of, ah, oh, Bilal's no good. Everybody hates him. If he fights his game plan of make this thing as boring as humanly possible, make this fight like Valentina Shevchenko, one of the greatest champions of all time. Fight like Islam Makhachev, one of the greatest fighters of all time. Last Saturday, the way they fought last Saturday. Take the person down and grind him. Could he do that? Maybe. But I think advantage towards the younger, bigger athletes, the same way Morales did. Now he's forced to stand with you, and you can beat him in those exchanges. Bilal Muhammad's actually been knocked down 6 times in the UFC. There's a path there. You just got to stuff the takedowns first, and I think Gary's going to be able to do that. Gun to my head, I think Gary's better than Jack Maddalena, at least what I saw from this weekend. I don't really see any huge X factor to him. Gary, meanwhile, is striking just as good as Jack's, I believe. His volume's pretty good. His wrestling, his ring IQ. And when you talk about, man, Bilal's wins are just aging very poorly. Gary's wins are aging extremely good. Carlos Prates, Michael Venom Page, that's quality work. Those are nice wins. I got to go Gary as well. But if you got it at minus 180, minus 190, the more you start to fall to this minus 220, minus 230.
I wish I had more.
Yeah. It's like eventually the line will get away from you. But I think Gary wins, to be honest. So I got 4 underdogs on this card, but it ain't in these top 2 fights.
Yeah. I got 4. Like, I got multiple underdogs. I think I have a pretty good shot. But it. And yeah, I guess I said dog or pub. I have no intention of betting Dan Hooker, to be perfectly honest. It was just for the purposes of the show that I said that. But I don't see myself really necessarily getting to it. I won't be getting to Bilal Muhammad. I will say. But you were like, everyone hates Bilal Muhammad. In this part of the world.
That's true.
In this part of the world, who are they going to be cheering for? Bilal Muhammad or the cuck?
Yeah.
Cucking would be very frowned upon in Qatar or Doha, Qatar.
You get your wiener chopped off, apparently, for something like that down in that part of the world.
Allegedly.
You're not wrong. All Bilal's got to do is keep this thing close, and maybe they're going to grease someone.
Same judges that they bring from Vegas and everything like that.
So. Yeah, who are also cucks that like to hang out in the corner of the room while the real men do the action.
Who are probably actually in... are in Gary's room while he's in the corner.
All right.
Right. That's enough of that. We both pick Gary. We got Volkan Uzdemir taking on Alonzo Menafield. Volkan is a minus 225 favorite to come back on Menafield, about plus 190. I mean, all of the metrics, all of the stats, you look at the two of these these guys. Everything points towards Volkan Uzdemir. So I don't know why I'm second-guessing this. It's just like, I don't know. Menafield just finds a way to, like, turn fights into slow, drawn-out, like, you know, little barn burners. Like, his stats are absolutely pathetic. Like, even the Julius, like, those stats were raised their close. He won the fight very, very cleanly, but he was a pretty big underdog in that spot. He got knocked out in 12 seconds against Ulberg. You look at Volkan, he went to decision and was actually pretty competitive time out against. So, like, everything points towards Volkan being a favorite you should trust this week. But I don't know. Something in the pit of my stomach says that, like, this is, like, a big-time trap because it seems too easy at minus 225. Where are you at with this fight?
Yeah, honestly, you're going to probably fall into that trap. I think Volkan just stiffs him, to be honest with you. You're talking about, you know, the metrics of Volkan's a little bit younger. Because normally we talk about, Volkan's 36 now. Menafield's 38. And Volkan's maybe slowing down a little bit. Menafield is slowing down. What Menafield's been doing is looking good against very green and inexperienced guys. He's just been gatekeeping. His fight with Julius Walker. It was Julius Walker's UFC debut. And he took it on a week's notice. And he won a split decision over Julius Walker in a real competitive fight. And then if it's like, well, Julius is a super prospect, no offense to Julius, I like the guy, but his next fight against Rafael Sequeira, he didn't look good at all. And yet he was held to a split decision against him. His next fight against Umar C, I think Umar C long-term be good prospect, at this point, he's 2-0 in the UFC and very green. So he's able to keep these guys that have holes in their game and have not been tested. And he's able to stand his ground against them. Against guys that are experienced, especially guys that are experienced and have power, he's going down. You mentioned the Carlos Ulbrich fight, 9 seconds. The Azamat Mirzakhanov fight, same thing. He's so gun-shy of like, oh my God, if this guy hits me, it's over. He doesn't throw anything. He doesn't have enough wrestling to take a guy down. It doesn't really spam cage control all that much. And so he's just a sitting target until Mirzakhanov eventually folds him over. When you look at Volkan Uzdemir 1, it's, yeah, he's fought in a high ilk of guy, but his fight with Ulbrich, right? Ultra competitive. His fight with Johnny Walker. Walker's gone on a little winning streak since then, but I mean, he knocks him out in the first round, no problem. Bogdan Guskov turned out to be pretty okay. He knocks him down, takes his back, chokes him out. Who are the guys that knock out Volkan Uzdemir? Because maybe he's getting chinny. Maybe Menafield, a former football player and big athletic guy. Maybe he can just clip him. Yeah, only two guys have ever knocked him out in the UFC. Jiří Procházka in round two. That's Jiří Procházka, man. And also, he beat Jiří in the first round. He's got killed in the second. And then Daniel Cormier in a world title fight.
Are we just going to skip over Anthony Smith? I know it's 2018, so it's pretty irrelevant, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, I feel like this would be a good time to say that. Friends don't let friends lay chalk on guys who lost to Anthony Smith.
Yeah, and I remember that Anthony Smith fight. He had a really nice jab, and he was moving good, and Anthony Smith got some cardio, different, and he got the takedown, and he chokes him out. Alonzo Menafield, if we want to talk about takedowns, he'd be sitting at a 31%. He never took down Umar C. He never took down Julius Walker, never took down Azamat or Carlos Ulbrich, won over Dustin Jacoby. Essentially, he's had one takedown in the last 3 years, like 9 fights. So if he's not going to take down Volkan, he's playing into his game. In fact, Volkan's probably got a better ground game. If Volkan is able to take Menafield down, he can have some success. If not, we just got 2 strikers. Now, how are you going to beat Volkan? Either have maybe some big power like he does or outwork him. But Menafield's kind of a lower volume guy. I just feel like he's an excellent gatekeeper to legit prospects or fading veterans. And I kind of feel like Volkan's not necessarily a fading veteran. Really, it's not as easy as saying MMA math. One guy got smoked by Ulbrich and one guy didn't. But what you can say is that Ulbrich has been an absolute problem for everybody he's faced. Outside of like Jan Blachowicz and Volkan Uzdemir. And technically by the numbers, Volkan was outstruck 98-96. Like the only guy that's come close in the striking stats with him, able to take his best punches, showed off a good chin, showed off good defensive skills, you know, firing up, almost landed 100 significant strikes over 15 minutes. Whereas Menafield literally got punched once in the face and crumpled over. So, yeah, maybe it feels too good to be true. And at minus 250,
there's got to be Volkan, yeah.
Yeah, but it's got to be a Volkan play either way. Maybe you're going to be puckered up while it starts, but I think in the end, you're going to be pretty satisfied with the result.
Yeah. All right, we got Mictor Bekele-Orlbay taking on Jack the Joker Hermanson at welterweight, which is an interesting little twist to this thing, considering Orlbay was he barely made 155 pounds, but he was a lightweight. Technically, he was supposed, contractually obligated to make 155 pounds. But my God, he was the biggest lightweight of all time. So welterweight makes a lot more sense for him. But Jack, at the ripe old age of what, 37? He's definitely long in the tooth at this point in his career, but he's coming down to 170. So first things first, before you really get overly invested in a fight like this, I think it would be prudent to watch weigh-ins, make sure Jack makes it, everything like that. But, I mean, you go back, you watch Orlbay in his fight against Matheus Rebecki, like, that was a dogfight, an absolute war. I know he went out there, got a quick Kimura against Masaya, but how good was Masaya of really a PFL guy being brought over to the UFC? And for like a one-time fight in Azerbaijan, maybe it was just completely overrated. I like if Jack looks good on the scales on Friday, Cody, I'm going to have a tough time not pulling the trigger on Jack at like plus 200. Where are you at with this fight?
I got Jack Hermanson as well, but pending that he makes the weight and he looks good on the scales. But yeah, with Nikolai Orlbay, he's very one-dimensional with he's a weight bully, very, very large man, and he likes to get those takedowns. All of his fights is kind of predicated on him getting the takedowns. Juros Medic, he gets 7 of them. Elvis Brenner gave him a go. Brenner's most definitely a 55er, a small 55er. Brenner gave him a go, but he got five takedowns on him, right? Matheus Rebecki, and that's the fight that you mentioned. Excellent point. So when you watch back that Matheus Rebecki fight, first of all, Orlobai misses weight. He comes in at 159 pounds, right? Mm-hmm. And they say they moved it to a catchweight of 160, but all the same, it's because he was over. His fight with Tofik Musaev, his last time out, it's at 165. So they've been catering to the fact that he can't make lightweight, but he's not had to fight a big welterweight to this point. But when he fought Matheus Rebecki, I rewatched it a few times, he walks into a whole lot of punches. Like, Rebecki just throws, and Orlobai giant head on him and does not move it side to side, does not move his feet side to side. He constantly just walks into punches. All of his entries result in him getting punched in the face, which is why his eyes swell shut. He's bleeding all over the place. He gasses out, gets hit a whole lot. Matheus Rebecki has a 66-inch reach. He's got little tiny arms on him. Misses most people. The only way he hits you is if you're walking into the punches, which Orlobai does. Jack Hermansson has an 11-inch reach advantage over Rebecki. 11 inches more. I think it's only four. Is it three over Orlobai? But all
77
the same
is, to 40 or 74.
74. And Orlobai just doesn't fight long. He's a big guy at lightweight, but he's 5'10" with a 74-inch reach. Right now, you got someone Jack Hermansson. Jack's 6'1" with a 77
middleweights the entire time.
And you think, okay, well, Orlobai's got the wrestling. Who takes down Jack? He's given up like one takedown in his last 10 fights.
Orlobai was taken down by Elvis Brenner three times, Rebecki three times. Like, come on.
And you're a hardcore, so you remember that video that surfaced a couple years ago, Jack Hermansson in just a straight wrestling match in a cage with Chimaev? Holy shit, he does good. He does really good. The guy can absolutely wrestle. He's a BJJ black belt. He's got a nasty submission game. His striking, although it's kind of mechanical, with he loves just jab, low kick, jab, low kick, jab, low kick. Advanced basics work against a guy like that who's literally just slugging overhands, stiff jab, overhand, shoot to your hips. He exerts way too much energy. Having to throw around a big body like Jack is going to tire him out even faster. And I just think, you know, Jack's two fights back, we picked him over Joe Pyfer. Pyfer wins the first round, second round's a little more close. Jack takes over. It's a five-rounder. Jack's going to have to get on it, but Pfeiffer's huge. Orlobai's not stacking up. This is his first time, not his first time fighting at welterweight. He has fought at welterweight, but it's his first time in a while. He's been fighting at 55, 160, 165. Now he's all the way in there versus not a real welterweight, a guy that's coming down, a guy that can probably stuff the takedowns. If he does get taken down, his jiu-jitsu is more than enough to get back up. He has been knocked out a few times, but Orlobai's not some murderous power puncher.
Let's face it.
I think it's all lining up for a dog play on Jack Hermansson. Watch weigh-ins, sure, but if you start to lose the number on it, like I'm already in on it, so it is what it is, but I'm just hoping he makes the weight and looks good, and maybe he'll add more or whatever the case may be, but I'm intrigued. Plus money on a version plus of 200. Jack that could be even better at 170 pounds. We don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, and he's 37 years old. You have to figure this move to welterweight. This is his last hurrah, right? Like if he gets starched by Orlobai, those gloves are probably coming off, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Jack completely retire. Like, this is like his last hurrah, I would think. He's taking a shot, betting on himself to have like one last run at a different weight class, because the guys at 185 are getting a little bit too big. Love Jack this week. All right, we got Sergey Spivak taking on Shamil Gaziev, -140. For the product of Bahrain, Shamil Gaziev, Sergey Spivak, the underdog at +120. Where are you at with this one?
That's super greasy, man, because both guys have awful cardio. So this thing is going to be a lot of clinch control and maybe fishing for takedowns in the first round. And then it's just going to divulge into absolute grease. The problem with Sergey Spivak, even though he's only 30, and I keep drumming the hole, he's young for heavyweight, and he's conceivably getting better, and he trains in Las Vegas and has great training partners and great coaches around him. Maybe he's getting better. He just gasses so fast. His last fight with Waldo Cortez Acosta, first round, he kind of struggles to get any takedowns going, struggles to control him, but it's just after the first round where he mostly hugs him up against the cage, going into the second, he's burnt out right away, tired. Loses the second, loses the third, gets beat up on his feet. Not a good look. The fight before that with Jelton Almeida starts off well. Takedown Spivak. Back takes Spivak, fishing for a rear naked choke. Jelton rolls into him. And then, when have you ever seen Jelton Almeida this violent in his life? Jelton's not a ground and pound specialist. Jelton's not a knock you out from top kind of guy. Spivak just, he seems to gas really fast. And then when you're tired, you're not defending yourself. His fight over Cyril Gane, he takes a beating in that second round, eventually gets put over because he's tired out. Now, those guys are good. He lost to Tom Aspinall. Aspinall's good. He lost to Gane. Gane's good. Almeida's not bad. Waldo's okay. It's just, it's the same thing. He's good for 3-4 minutes, and then he completely tires. When he wins fights, he's usually finishing them in the first round because that's where he would be the most dangerous. Gaziev's kind of the same thing. In the first round, he's not bad. In fact, this guy's got some decent power. He's got a knockout win over Martin Budaj. He's got a knockout win over Thomas Pettersson. If he lands his hands early, he's got some okay power. His wrestling, that guy's a Dagestani wrestling champion. No doubt he can take you down early. Rounds 2 and 3, like, watch back that Dante Mays fight. Oh my God. You know, you shouldn't be standing there with your hands on your hips getting stiffed in the face by Dante Mays at any point if you're some Dagestani wrestling champion and you can fight a few rounds and you've got some power. But these guys are both bottom of the barrel. I think Gaziev's got obviously the better wrestling. And Gaziev, dare I say, in this part of the world where they're not checking his drug screening, maybe he's got slightly better cardio, but he does have better power. And I do feel like that's the reason I am going to take Gaziev, is that he's capable of knocking Spivak out. If Spivak, who's really only just a jiu-jitsu guy, if he can't take down Gaziev, which, who's taking down Gaziev? He's a really good wrestler. He himself is a gas bag with limited tools. His takedown defense isn't an issue. So if Spivak's not taking him down, then they're both striking. And the only real difference between both of them striking is that Gaziev's got some power, and Gaziev maybe has the ability to put Spivak over. So I'm going to take Shamil, maybe a Shamil by TKO if you want to get degenerate with it. But what a bad fight. It's a bad fight. They're actually both name guys. They both headlined cards. Everybody's familiar with them. But just the way they match up with each other, this is not going to be a good fight. Unless Gaziev knocks him out in the first. So that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah. If this fight gets extended too, I mean.
Brutal.
Like, how far do you think where he trains, where Gaziev trains, how far do you think it is to where they're fighting here?
Bahrain to Qatar, yeah, I wouldn't know. Like, flight-wise, like, maybe, like, I don't know, a four-hour flight?
Way less. I mean, you can drive. You can drive from Manama, Bahrain, which is the capital, to Doha, and you have to go around this, like, water basin, and it's 4 hours.
You could drive in 4 hours. Yeah.
Flying, dude, probably be like 30. It's like a 30-minute flight. Yeah. They're neighbors.
And on some sheik's private plane, it'd be a 15-minute flight. Mm-hmm. And Gaziev's hanging out with sheik princes.
If this goes to decision, I don't like Spivak's chances, to be perfectly honest. I suppose, yeah, it's so greasy. I'll side with Gaziev, but don't love it. Don't intend to let it ruin my week by any stretch of the imagination either. We move on down. We got Alex Perez taking on Asu Almabayev. Almabayev, a minus 210 favorite. Perez can be had for plus 180. Last time we saw Perez, he was doing quite well against Tatsuru Taira. So the big question for me in this fight, before that injury, and then he had another fight booked, I believe, and then pulled out of that as well. It's further down on the list on UFC. Yeah, Steve Ursig was booked as well. He had to pull out of that one. But I don't know. Something's a little bit fishy about this, to be perfectly honest. Like, Almabayev, volume's always been pretty low. I suppose he's got some decent wrestling chops, but he's never really been able to hold anybody down. I think Alex Perez is the better striker. We're fighting at flyweight. Everything leads me towards a dog play on Alex Perez here at like plus 180. What are your thoughts on this fight?
I got Perez as well. Part of it, you got to get dog money. His body's just riddled with injuries. But when the guy shows up and he competes, like, I don't mean this in any type of like nonsensical way. The guy's world class. He absolutely is. He's a top flyweight. His body just does not agree. He got to the point where he was supposed to fight Brandon Moreno, right? And at the same time, Figueiredo is supposed to fight Cody Garbrandt. Had he just gone out there and beaten Brandon Moreno, he would have earned the title shot himself. Instead, Garbrandt got hurt. They needed an opponent for Figgy on like 3 days' notice. And he got put into a title fight that he had not prepared for. Biggest fight of his career for a belt. And thrown in there against one of the best at the time, Davison Figueiredo. He loses quick. Never even got started in that fight. And then it's the injuries. I think he had 4 fights with Matt Schnell fall apart. He had a couple fights with Askar Askarov fell apart. He missed weight a couple times. He had the fight. The doctors canceled the fight due to health reasons. His fight with Amir Albazi fell through. His fight with Kai Kara-France fell through. His fight with Manel Kopp fell through because of issue. He weighed in against Manel Kopp. And then on the night of the fight, they're like, you are not healthy. You can't compete. His body's riddled. And then he comes back from that, fights Muhammad Makhachev. They don't give these guys favors. Think about it this way. He fought Davidson Figueiredo on a 3 days notice for the belt. 2 year long layoff. What's his comeback fight? Alexander Pantoja. What? And then he gets a 2 year long layoff. And then what's his comeback fight? Muhammad Makhachev. He holds him to 3 for 20 on takedowns, gives him everything he can handle.
Yeah.
Almost wins the fight on another 2 year long layoff. Knocks out Matheus Nicolau. Nice little win. And then they give him Tatsuya Tyron. Like Paul mentioned, he won the first round. Got a takedown of his own. He stuffed a couple of takedowns. He doubled them up in the significant strikes. His leg kicks are nasty. He likes to throw bunches. He'll explode into the pocket, throw 2, 3, 4 at a time, end it with the leg kick. Guy moves well. 33-year-old flyweight with a ton of injuries, not great, but he's not a 40-year-old flyweight. If he's healthy and he's in the cage, he's got world-class skills. He's capable of big volume. He can definitely wrestle. He's got excellent grappling. He's the total package. He doesn't get to compete very often. And when he does compete, it's always against the toughest guys out there. And so it's easy to say he's 1-4 in his last 5 fights. It's always the toughest guys. So plus 180 in a flyweight fight. The dog's always got a shot. And this guy has got one hell of a shot. Go ahead.
The market absolutely loves Almabayev here.
When I look at Almabayev, right, he is live or die on his takedowns, and that's all of his fights, right? He has to get multiple takedowns, and against Ode Osborne, 9 against CJ Vergara, 6 against Jose Johnson. Well, those are the kind of guys you're going to be able to take down. His fight with Matheus Nicolau, you watch that one, he almost loses, man. Like, it's 1-1 in the third. He does end up getting a knockdown, helps kind of seal it for him. But when he's forced to strike, he's very, very low volume, doesn't have big power. His fight with Manel Kopp, he can't take him down. No. He can't strike with him. Eventually, he's turning his back away, running away. Now, Manel Kopp's tough. But really, it's this last fight with Jose Ochoa. Ochoa, you know how I love my Peruvians. He's got a great gas tank, and he can bang, and he's got a good chin, but he don't know how to wrestle. And so, yeah, it's easy to get to his hips, and he keeps getting back up. Is that he keeps getting taken back down. If you want to look at damage versus control time, he got taken down 7 times, and yet he still outlanded him 26-22. He still had 2 submission attempts. Almabayev is take you down, hold you down. No big ground and pound. No giant threat of the grappling. I think Perez is better jiu-jitsu. I think that his wrestling is good enough that if he stuffs a few of these takedowns, he's going to double him up in the striking stats. If he does get taken down, he's going to be constantly working. And then I understand it's that part of the world. Yeah, this Kazakh guy is going to be left to die on the scorecards if we get there. So I feel like at plus 180 for Alex Perez, I know he'll fight for my dollar. Will his body hold up? I don't know. That's anybody's guess. But if you're giving me plus 180 on it, I'm rolling the dice on that it does. So I actually also have Alex Perez. Big fan of his work. He's had a lot of bad luck, and I'm hoping this Saturday is not another one of those cases.
100%. All right, we move on down. We've got Luke Riley making his UFC promotional debut, taking on Bogdan Grad. Riley, a minus 250 favorite to come back on Grad, plus 210. If you're not familiar with Luke, he's like pretty fun British prospect, trains with Paddy Pimblett, everything like that. He doesn't have the same game or style as Paddy by any stretch of the imagination. I think he is there to be exploited in the wrestling. I lost, but I faded him again in his last fight at like plus 700 on like Teriel Abasov. And Abasov had a little bit of success with the wrestling in like round one, then gassed and got finished. It was not pretty, but it was like plus 700. It's like, I think he is there to be taken down, controlled. Can Bogdan Grad do that in this fight, Cody? That's the big question.
I'm so tempted to take Bogdan Grad, but that's one of the underdogs this week that I'm kind of on the fence about. Mm-hmm. Is that Luke Riley's all action, in your face, pocket, boxing inside the pocket. Constantly throwing in combination, gas tank for days, all action guy. But as Paul mentioned, not only in his last fight against Teriel Abasov, where he got taken down a few times in the first round and controlled, but you go back just a couple years ago, this Alexander Loof fight. Loof's tossing him around and having some success on the ground as well. So he is a training partner of Paddy Pimblett. And whereas that sounds great, he's also a training partner of Molly McCann. Doesn't mean anything. You train with somebody, doesn't make you them. But at 26, and just constantly coming forward and constantly throwing big volume, I like this kid a lot. But could somebody with a game plan of take him down and muscle him down have some success? Yes. And Bogdan Grad's kind of that guy. Like, for no, I couldn't say Bogdan Grad's a great wrestler or a great striker or a great anything, but He's committed, bro. He's a dog on a bone. He will give you everything he's got the entire time. He's had a lot of success using that offensive wrestling against Michael Aswell. He's getting beat on the feet. He does keep up a good volume as well, but it's the three takedowns. This fight with Lucas Alexander, he loses the first round. The second round, it's constant takedowns, tires Lucas Alexander, and then he gets the TKO. That last fight with Muhammad Naimov, he got three takedowns over Naimov and had some decent success time. He would try to go for the back and lose position, but here's a guy that maybe if he just tried to slow it down a little bit, could have some prolonged period of success. My thing is that if people generally go with those eye-catching blows, and Bogdan Grad is not a take you down. And again, I love betting on Makhachev. I love betting on a Valentina Shevchenko. Staple them to the mat and win the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some people are watching it for entertainment. They don't want you to do that. I have money on you, so that's what I want you to do, because this is the path of least resistance. Bogdan could get takedowns and hold down Luke Riley. He'd be okay. It's not in his DNA, man. He likes to have fun fights. He likes to take you down and then try to take the back and lose position. Try to pass him out and lose position. Try to get something going. And I think that eagerness is going to play to Luke Riley, who all he has to do is, shit, I've been controlled for 3 minutes, but the guy makes one mistake, getting too anxious. You get back up. You box him up. You get forward. You start landing some shots. Bogdan Grad tends to react not great. He's got a good chin, but he tends to sometimes shy away when he gets hit or duck his head. His fight with Tom Nolan on the Contender Series once upon a time, he got knocked out in like a minute and 23 seconds. I kind of feel like over the length of 15 minutes, Luke Riley's going to work his way back into this thing. Now, maybe you take Luke Riley as a live bet. Maybe you don't love this pre-fight money line and you know Bogdan Grad's going to be able to take him down early the way that Abasov was able to do the last time out. But same way that Abasov, that sequence in the second round, Abasov's gas. He's gas because one, he's getting hit to the body. Two, it's like, yeah, I'm trying to take him down, but I'm exerting tons of energy having to do it. Grad's got a much better gas tank. He should be able to keep that going. But I think they're going to be looking at the more meaningful blows over some control time and a back take and this. So I feel like I'm going back towards Luke Riley on this one. Got a couple underdogs I like more. But if you're looking for a dog shot, Grad's not a bad one. It's decent plus 200 here. And is plus 200 right now? Is that what it's still at?
It's growing. It's like plus 225 in some spots.
Yeah, like it's not a bad number at all. And he does have a viable path to victory. I'm not seeing it as much as I'd like to in my head. So I'm going to still go with the favorite here in the debuting British kid.
Yeah. To fade Riley, I think the fade's coming. But I once, you brought it up the perfect point. And like, that's what I was kind of flipping through as you were talking about it there. Oh,
Amber Alert. Someone's missing.
Yo, if you're not scheduled test. Thanks. Oh, I feel safe. Thanks for that. They have these like scheduled tests sometimes. Like sometimes it's valuable to be like, hey, somebody's on the loose with a rifle in your neighborhood. You're like, I'm gonna stay inside. But that one was actually for nothing. So thanks, government of Nova Scotia.
Thank
for
you.
For all of that. Yeah, what was I saying? Okay. Not holding position. So it's like I was just kind of like rifling through some of these fights. One, Lucas Alexander, he was able to get 4 minutes and 18 seconds of control time against Lucas Alexander. Don't forget, Lucas Alexander is also the guy who got knocked out by Jekka Saragi. So,
and he missed weight for that fight against Bogdan Grad, and he was gassed because he missed weight.
Not a great look. No. The Aswell fight. And this Aswell fight is very similar to what I think could play out. Here, you'll get your takedowns, but I think he only had like a minute and 32 seconds of control time against Michael Aswell on three takedowns over the course of three rounds. He ended up winning a split decision, but ate 155 shots. If you're eating 155 shots against Luke Riley, you're probably getting knocked out. So, yeah, it's Riley for me. Riley by knockout. We'll see where the number goes as the week goes along, but I expect him probably to become an even bigger favorite. Riley by knockout, my official pick. Next up, we got Abdulrahman Yakyaev taking on Rafael Cerqueira. Biggest favorite on the card, minus 1,400 for Yakyaev. Rafael Cerqueira still on the roster because they were like, ooh, we need to get this Russian a win. Yakyaev looked like one of the better looking prospects on Contender Series this year. He's minus 1,400 at this point. So what the hell are you really supposed to do with this there, Coates? He's the pick, but you're not going to be getting rich unless you pick the way that he wins this fight. The submission prop is like plus 250. I saw in some spots. Maybe it's moved since then. It's moved from Bet Online, but plus 250s in some spots out there. I don't mind that because like his inside the distance prop is minus 800. Like his KO prop is like minus 160. I'm willing to like risk like a club and sub. So Yakyaev by submission. KO is obviously more likely and with good reason, I suppose, but wouldn't be surprised. You go through this guy's history, it's just like he can kind of do it to you any way he wants. Get you off the minus 1400. But that's where I'm at with this fight. What about you?
Well, it's just like last week with Sirsakayev. It's like, well, we know he's going to win, but he's minus 1,000. It's like,
those first two rounds are dicey, bro.
He's not that good. but it was just, you know, there's an easy path for him to maybe get a knockout here. And thankfully, he ended up landing the knockout. I would think Yakayev does the exact same thing, gets a knockout over Sirkaya at some point. This guy's good, man. I like what he brings to the table. He is a master of sport in MMA in Russia. He's a master of sport in combat sambo. Chechenian kid, moves over to Turkey. He can do it all. He is southpaw, but he does enjoy switch stance every now and again. If you want to stand with him, he'll knock you out. He's got a nice, lengthy left hand, good power in it, nice combination punching. And if he does not want to knock you out, he's got excellent timing on his takedowns. Gets right to the hip, draws you out, single leg, double legs, whatever he wants, gets on top of you and goes to work. He's the Aries FC champ. Jackie, Jean, Paul, and Bengai. Those guys are like, they're okay. But to smash them each in like a minute and a half, 2.5 minutes, like he's running through the best guys over there. And it was a decent look. Alec Lorenz, not a good fighter, but he smashes him in 30 seconds. He literally throws four punches, backs the guy straight up, knees him in the face, hits the ground, punch, game over. 24 years old, getting better, got good experience for the division, good size for the division, can strike, can wrestle, seems like the total package. And then how are they testing him in his UFC debut? Extremely soft against a guy that's 0-3 with the organization, having been knocked out in his first two. And then, you know, I went the distance with Julius his last time out and, you know, not particularly great fight. I just don't really see what he brings to the table. Now, when you look at a guy like Yankayev and you say, you know what? He smashed Lorenz. He smashed Jackie Jean. He smashed Bengai. What if he doesn't get that first round smash? Then what happens? Well, actually, he went the distance with this Nikolai Kovalenko, who was 7-0 at the time, a couple years ago. It's a 5-round fight. It goes the full five, and you can watch it online. His cardio doesn't look like it weans. He beats the guy 50-45. He takes him down in every single round. He beats him standing, and he's like 22 years old at the time. Now he's 24. He's getting better. I don't see where the hole in his game is. Rafael Sequeira looks good getting off the bus. You see him on the scales. You're like, oh, the guy kind of big, man. Are we sure that this is going to be a walk in the park? But, yeah, when the fight starts, it kind of feels like it's a walk in the park. Ibo Aslan. Don't really rate him, but of course, just gets him to stand square up against the cage, unloads, knocks him out in 50 seconds. Modestus Bukauskas, serviceable fighter, but nothing special. Kind of fights similar, long, lengthy, switch stance at times, like somewhat like Yankayev, striking a bit, and he knocks him out in the first round. And then Julius Walker, it's like his second fight in the UFC. He's very green. Guy was playing basketball just a few years back. He beats him. Now you're taking on a guy who's a master of sport in combat sambo and MMA in Chechnya, and now it's not going to go well for you, man. When this thing opened up at -1,000, it's put it everywhere. Now it's -1,200, -1,400. It'll probably go off at -1,800, -2,000. Mm-hmm. I don't know why UFC feels the need to put on these squash matches, because this isn't something that happened a few years back. They never really gave you -1,000 type lines, and now every single week you're getting at least one of them. But a guy who's 7-0 he's 24 years old, and he looks like an uber prospect in a division that they're desperate for uber prospects. He's not throwing the fight, man. I ain't worried about that. He's going to get his hand raised. And it's just like Paul's saying, what method do you go with? Do you go inside the distance? It's -800. So you probably either got to take him in the first round, or I don't.
-160, which I don't hate, but.
-160 in the first round. And then let's say you did like the knockout and the knockout was -160. Then maybe you go with that first round knockout. And he's been knocked out a couple times in the first round. Sequeira has. Yakayev just finished his last three opponents all in the first round. Some of them, which were kind of equally as good as this guy, if we're being fair. Yeah, chances are if you like that knockout at -160 and you like that first round at -160, then just take the first round knockout, which I don't think there's a price out for right now, but you probably get plus money out of that. If not,
definitely get plus money out of that.
You should.
I would think so.
first round knockout prop.
Maybe like plus 115 or something like that, but you'll get plus money on that.
How else do you attack this thing? There really isn't any other way to go about it. And this guy's not messing around. He wants his $50,000 bonus and he wants a highlight reel. So
he's I took a small Qatar shot on Yakyaev by sub, and like I'm hoping like club and sub plays into get me some justice after the Dawkins KO prop that I had. I had Dawkins KO last week. He knocks him down in clubs and stuff. It's like, well, that's part of the game.
He had Mearshart done.
He didn't have to go to the ground at all. He could have just been. He could have just stood there and been like, "Not get up," and then like it would have been a KO. But it is what it is. I mean, props to him. It was a brilliant performance for Dawkins. It's fine, but. Yeah, that's the game you play when you start, you know, splitting these hairs and clubs and subs come into play. I'm just hoping the club and sub comes back to me on a plus 250 ticket on Yakyaev. But, you know, it could go either way, obviously. It could go either way in terms of how Yakyaev wins this fight. So pick your poison. We got Tagir Ulanbekov taking on Kyoji Horiguchi. Ulanbekov, minus 195 favorite to come back on Kyoji, plus 169. Nice to see Kyoji.
Oh, yeah.
After many years away, make his way back to the octagon. Always like was a high-end touted prospect. Had fought the best of the best. Let's face it. Who's had the higher level of competition over the course of their careers? Like, it's Kyoji, and it isn't even particularly close. Ulanbekov's always been kind of the weak link of, like, the Khabib family tree, in my humble opinion. And you know me, I've faded him. It hasn't always worked out, but, like, he's always been pretty respected. I mean, he's on a 4-fight winning streak, so I did bet him against Maxim last time out, and he damn near gave me a heart attack. I had him in some parlays. He's a massive favorite there, and that fight did not play out nearly as much of a favorite as he did not cover his price tag despite getting the win in that fight. He even got taken down three times in that fight. The Carpenter fight, he ended up doing pretty well, I suppose, in there. We were both on Carpenter in that spot. Durden, you know, that's kind of the writings on the wall with Durden, that he is a real problem in round one, round two, round three, not so much. These fights where he struggles to get the takedown, struggles to hold guys down for periods of time. Tim Elliott was able to get the win against him. And Bruno Silva was able to get like four takedowns against him.
Bruno gave him hell.
I never really thought Tagir's all that great. And I think on the feet, I don't think this is really competitive whatsoever. And on top of that, you'd be like, oh, well, you know, like one, maybe you could be like, oh, Tagir's a prospect. Tagir's 34. Kyoji is 35. Like, they're pretty much the same age. Tell me, like, I already bet Kyoji Horiguchi, Cody, but tell me why I shouldn't put more on him.
Well, I actually have Kyoji Horiguchi as well, Paul, so we are on the same page. All the right. Only thing I don't understand is this is a guy that was 7-1 in the UFC, his only loss to Demetrius Johnson.
Yep.
And since his UFC release, he's gone 16-3. He's like a 45-fight veteran in total combat sports. He trains at American Top Team. He's beloved by hardcore fight fans all over. And you got him buried on the prelims? Like, I don't quite understand it. But
maybe it's going to be like the prelims main event or something. It's the only way it would make sense.
Yeah, because this is an awesome fight, man. But it's like you're saying, Paul, is that I feel like Ulanbekov, although he's got that Russian style and he's buddies with Khabib, it's like the matchmakers like him. They know his limitations and they've booked him to a lot of winnable fights. This fight with Bruno Silva you mentioned, it's very close. He gets taken down four times by Bruno. He struggles to take Bruno down. It's that Bruno technically outstruck him 47-46. And in his win over Alan Nascimento, you know, he took down Nascimento, avoided the submissions, but technically he got outstruck 25-18. His fight with Cody Durden, he got outstruck by Cody Durden 32-24 at the time of the finish. Mm-hmm. Clayton Carpenter, you're right, we were both on that. If he didn't get those takedowns, he loses that fight. Carpenter is beating him standing, and then he's just able to get quick takedowns with 2 minutes left and ride out top control. Striking's not good. He can't strike for a prolonged period. His wrestling, although it's effective, he has to use a certain level of guy. And then you mentioned that last fight with Azat Maxim. He went 0 for 8 on takedowns over Maxim. And yet Maxim got him down 3 times. Didn't get a whole lot of control time out of it. But all the same, it's like Ulanbekov is getting a little bit older. He's had a lot of health issues himself. He's pulled out of a number of fights due to injuries or
struggles on the scales.
When you look at just his body of work, a lot of it's predicated on he gets those takedowns. Kyoji Horiguchi's got his number standings, better striker. He's faster than him. He's got a lot more versatility in his technique. He's just better all around, I think. His ability to scramble and get back up and stuff some of these takedowns, it's really good. I think he gives him everything he can handle. He's plus money at flyweight. That's already a good sign. But beyond that, it's like Paul said, this guy's fought all the best guys in the world and generally gives a really good account of himself. Whereas Tagir Ulanbekov, this is very strange to me. Ulanbekov is 6-1 in the UFC currently. His last fight was against the number 34 ranked guy. His fight before that, Clayton Carpenter, was the number 24 ranked guy. The highest ranked guy he's ever fought in the UFC was Tim Elliott, who is ranked number 10, and he lost. How is it that a guy that's on a 4-fight winning streak right now, who's 6-1 in the promotion, in a division like flyweight, where they are desperate to hand out title fights, how is this guy not fighting any of the top guys? Where's his fight with Pantoja, or Roy Val, or Moreno, or Josh Van, or Steve Erzsig, or Tatsuya Taira, or Manel Kopp, or Amir Albazi? How come they've never given him a whiff of any of those guys? Because Khabib and team are like, no. Just let him win some fights against guys that are not ranked in the top 20 or top 30 of the division. And Kyoji Horiguchi jumping back in, he's technically not ranked because he's jumping back in, but I don't think that's the right fight for you, man. This guy's extremely talented. When I said he's 16-3 since the UFC released him, okay, the 3 losses, they're all at 135 pounds. Like, you can say, dude lost to Patchy Mix. Patchy Mix is twice his size. And if you watch that fight, Patchy Mix, it wins a 3-2. Kyoji won rounds 2 and 4. And it really is just, Mix is so big, he grabs him up against the cage and then he can just jump on his back. Mm-hmm. Tagir's not going to do that. Sergio Pettis, he's kicking Pettis's ass and then a spinning back fist in the 4th round. It was dope. It was dope.
Does well in scrambles in that fight against Sergio as well.
And like then he rematches him and beats him the 2nd time around.
Yeah.
Kai Asakura caught him with a punch early in the 1st round. Well, Ulanbekov's not a big power puncher. No. He's not the biggest submission threat. So his game is taking you down and holding you down. And Kyoji at his natural 125 pounds. Talk to Michael Thomas Brown at ATT. He says, this is the most talented guy that I've ever worked with pound for pound. Can do it all. When he loses, it's because he's in Japan and they got no one for him to fight. So he takes a super fight up a weight class. Him against a guy only 1 year younger than him, who's got a ton of injuries, who's only ever fought one guy ranked in the top 10 in the UFC, and it's the one fight he lost in the UFC. This is prime for the taking. So I got Kyoji Horiguchi on this one as well.
Nice. We're on the same page on a bunch of dogs. Either a good thing, or we're all falling into the same traps this week. We will find out. We got Behzad Makan taking on Alexandre Pantoja. Pretty close to a pick'em, but the early action has all been on Al Makan, who was like open at plus 170. That opening number doesn't count. It never does. But there was, you know, slight plus money, I suppose, available in some spots, plus 110, plus 120, maybe, depending on when you jumped on it, to be had. Where are you at with this fight, Codes?
Yeah, I got Topuria. I got Alex Topuria. Really, you could say he's a poor man's version of his brother, but he fights a pretty similar game plan. Like, he's low volume. He's not looking to overextend himself. He has heavy hands, and he's just waiting until he finds his opening, uncorks 2 good shots on you, and that's it. BJJ black belt, wrestling looks pretty solid. Hips look pretty solid. And what people got to realize is, he does not fight often, and he doesn't get out of the 1st round. So that UFC debut against Colby Thickness, first of all, it's his 1st fight in 2 years. 2nd of all, he'd never been outside the 1st round. So I think that does a ton for him, being able to fight, and now that's in February. Now you come back, 2 fights in the same year. You just had to fight 15 minutes. You got your UFC debut out of the way. This guy will continue to get better. I don't think he's a world beater like his brother. His brother might be pound for pound the greatest fighter you've ever seen in your life. Only needs 2 more wins and he's basically solidified it. His brother's badass. Yeah, this guy's still only 29. it's hard to say one's good to Poirier and one's bad to Poirier. He's really not done anything to this point.
Oh, it's not that hard to say which one's good and bad.
But. Well, clearly one's the greatest and the other one's not the greatest. But I just mean he's not really done anything wrong to be like, this guy stinks.
It'd be like Gretzky's brothers. It's like one of his brothers made the NHL. He's a great hockey player by anybody else's stretch of the imagination. But in the grand scheme of things, you're bad, Gretzky, because your brother is the greatest hockey player to probably ever walk this earth.
Yeah, you're living in one hell of a shadow. I'm hoping it's
you never had a chance, really. Yeah.
I'm just hoping it's like Minotauro Nogara, Big Nog and Little Nog, right? Where it's like, well, one guy's awesome, and the other guy is pretty good too, right? He's pretty good too. I would hope that that be the case. But when you watch him versus Colby Thigness, he rocks him with a big right hand. He's got some legitimate power. He's very patient. Looks like he's got high ring IQ. Obviously, having, you know, the GOAT as a training partner and someone that you can lean on is never a bad thing. And I kind of feel like they've got a privatized training center around them. They bring in specific training partners. They've got money. They've got accolades that, yeah, I think that if you give him a certain ilk of fighter that he's going to be able to thrive against them. When you look at Beksat Almakan, he is absolutely big power. That's it. But we haven't seen anything else from him. And what I mean by that is when he fights Umar Nurmagomedov, right? He lands the knockdown like the first, I don't know, 20 seconds of the round. He lands the knockdown. Holy crap. But what people forget about that first round is Umar right away reverses him, gets on top, and spends 4 minutes and 21 seconds on top of him in that first round. So there's a knockdown, but then he got controlled for 4 minutes and 21 seconds. Beyond that, Umar outlanded him 43-3 in the total strikes in that same round. It's a round that you scored a knockdown in and then proceeded to almost get 10-8 after that. The second round, Umar took him down on three attempts, 3 minutes of control time, but he outlanded him 39-0 in the significant strikes. He has no real ability to get back up to his feet. He's got no real good takedown defense, I don't think. He's just got big power. I think if you can wrestle this guy, put him on his back, he's a fish out of water. I think if you can avoid that big shot standing, maybe you can, you know, outstrike him. I don't think that he's the highest volume guy, but he's extremely explosive. And a knockdown over Umar and a knockout over Bracatona in his last fight, that's very nice work. Bracatona hits him a couple good times. He returns fire and absolutely puts him over. So, yes, the guy's got big power. But against Ilya Topuria, first of all, his brother has got perhaps the biggest power you've ever seen in your entire life. So I think he's got a good understanding on protect yourself. He doesn't overextend and leave a whole lot of opportunities. If he can shoot takedown and get this thing to the ground, which I think he's going to, he's got a big grappling advantage, I believe. And he's, I mean, just don't necessarily think that he has been, I guess, TKO'd once in his career, right? His fight with Ivo Ivanov is the only loss, but it's quite literally over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And there was 50 seconds left in the fight. So it's hard to say he's chinny and he can't take a punch. If you're getting plus money on Beksat, well, he's the kind of guy that embodies puncher's chance. I'm not seeing a whole lot other than big power. I don't think that that's the best way to get this win over Alex Topuria. So I actually got the champ's brother to get the win here.
Yep. I agree with you. We move on down. We got Ryan Loader taking on Ismael Nordiev. Nordiev, a minus 140 favorite. Comeback on Loader, plus 120. Bit of a grease fire here, Codes, in this fight. Loader, pretty one-dimensional wrestler, but he's very, very difficult when he gets you into those positions. Nordiev, on the other hand, used to fight significant lower weight class. Even some of these fights in Brave were like catch weights of 175 pounds. I mean, let's face it, the Jung Young Park fights, like Park was able to get the takedowns and stuff. And if Nordiev wasn't cheating like crazy throughout the course of that fight, I think the Iron Turtle would have done even better in that spot. Loader's just a guy that he's pretty one-dimensional. Chin obviously got exposed against Bakoev last time out there. Not a guy I really want to get like overloaded with, but he's got the right style to win this fight. So Ryan Loader's the side for me. What about you?
I got Loader for sure. Yeah, and I know this is going to sound like, oh man, he is absolutely confident in Loader. Let's load the wagon. It's like Ryan Loader is Ryan Loader. But if we're talking about style clash, Ryan Leonard beat him up. Ishmael Nordiev, you know, previously known as the Austrian Wonder Boy, he's a quitter, man. This guy's got a whole lot of quit in him. And I've watched a lot of these fights that you mentioned, Brave, you know, him versus Jarrah Hussein El Sawai, a couple leg kicks, and he quits on himself in the second round. The Marcin Bandel armbar, the Vadim Kutsky first round knockout. Mm-hmm. Times get tough for him. He finds an absolute way out. Guy has maybe some decent power in the first round. Moroccan, these guys hit hard and they're good strikers. And he can hit you hard in that first round. He's got no ability to fight beyond that. He's got no real heart. He's got no real gas tank. He's got no real tricks up his sleeve. This fight with Jung Yun Park, he looked massively slow. Jung Yun Park's just bulldozing forward and just doing this, okay? This guy, the Austrian Wonder Boy, high-level striking. He's got his head up in the air, moving back like this. Pokes him in the eye. He knees him in the face on the ground. And beyond all that, when Jung Yun Park's face is busted, they take 2 points, and everyone's saying, Jung Yun Park, why not just take the disqualification? Jung Yun Park says, nope, I'm going back out there to fight him. As soon as he would shoot takedowns on Nordiev, Nordiev's a fish out of water, and then he quits on himself. And then he's just sitting there, and he accepts positions, and got like 30-26. I don't know. There's a 2-point deduction, maybe the 30-25. He got beat up in that fight. His fight with Bruno Silva, that's his UFC debut, where he sprung an upset. He was, he was the favorite in that fight.
Maybe the most broken guy in the roster.
Cooper, he proceeded to go the distance with. The most broken, depressed, does not want to be their guy in the roster. He picks up a win there, but you go back to his initial run in the UFC, it's the same thing. Michel Prezeris took him down 3 times. Sean Brady had taken him down 4 times. His grappling's not good. His cardio's not that good. And you mentioned friends don't let friends bet on guys that have lost to Anthony Smith, which is fair. Friends certainly don't let friends bet on guys that have lost a Chance Rand counter who took him down twice as well.
Woof.
This guy is a not good.
That was 7 years ago.
It was 7 years ago. Right, but here's the
thing. But he's also lost to Kutsi and Brave like 3 years ago. So, yeah.
It's got a whole lot of issues. And you talk about some of those fights. Kutsi at 175. Marcin Bandel at 175. It's a weight class that's built basically around him, right? When he jumps in the UFC, this guy's not a middleweight. But because he gets Bruno Silva, he's able to win a middleweight fight. His second fight at middleweight against Jung Yun Park, he just got bullied in there, taken down repeatedly. Park's been a guy that's been bullied at time in his own career, and they're taking him down 10 times, and yet he was able to just really suck the spirit right out of him, where all of a sudden you're not trying to get up. You're not trying to fight back. You're basically just holding on. Even the knee to the ground, right? He loses the first round, or the first round's way too competitive for his liking. So in the second round, the second he throws him down, he just guns him in the face. That's not a guy that, hey, I'm winning this fight. I just got to keep doing what I'm doing. That's a guy that's getting tired, that's looking to get this thing over with as soon as possible. Ryan Loader, yeah, he's got a lot of faults, but he's an All-American wrestler. The guy, a wrestling coach over at Team Alpha Male. He spent time with Fluffy Hernandez. In fact, he's Fluffy Hernandez's wrestling coach over in Sacramento. This guy can wrestle for days on end. And honestly, when you look at this, Leon Shabazian wins aged quite well, considering he wins a fight on Tough Enough every other month. Gets on the Ultimate Fighter where he beats bums, but he just takes them down and wrecks them. His fight with Robert Valentin in his UFC debut, the Tough Finale, he just takes him down and rides him. That's his whole game. If he can take you down and you have bad takedown defense and bad cardio, then this is going to be rinse and repeat until you quit on yourself.
Unless you knock him out.
So how do you knock him out? You got to stuff the takedown first. And there's where Azmat Bakoev comes in. Azmat Bakoev has some faults, sure, but he's like North Essentia Russian, and like he can stuff takedowns. The guy's offensive wrestling isn't the best. His defensive wrestling is sick. And so that's why he's constantly trying to call out, let me fight Torrance Finney. Let me fight this guy. Let me fight guys that just want to shoot takedowns because I can stuff the takedowns and force you to strike. Mm-hmm. A guy like Yusri Balguri, he's not going to shoot any takedowns. He also wants to strike. That's a bad fight for him. But Bakoev against guys who are wrestler primary fighters, he does exceedingly well. You see in that fight, he shoots a couple takedowns, Ryan Loader does, but they get stuffed, and now he gets clunked in the face. Against Nordiev, if you shoot the takedowns and they, for whatever reason, get stuffed, you got to just stay on him. As long as he doesn't knock you out in the first round, the second and the third round, he just dissipates. His volume falls off. His power falls off. He starts to accept stuff. The other thing is when you're fighting Loader, you're waiting for this takedown. You're waiting for this takedown that it causes you to not open up and throw all that much offense of your own. Guy like Bakoev stuffs the takedowns. He's free to throw hands. Guy like Nordiev is going to be a little bit worried about it. So it's plus money on a guy that I actually legitimately think just wins this fight regardless. If I get knocked down in the first round, I get knocked down in the first round. Mm-hmm. I get it. It's punchy kicky. I'm very well aware of the game that we're playing, but Loader's going to break this guy down, get a whole lot of control time, and actually might, if you can get like a third round Loader by TKO or something, they're going to give you a real nice number on something crazy like that. It's not that crazy. Just like Valentin, once you're tired of me wrestling you and you give up, I'm just going to keep punching. The ref will say, defend yourself. You won't. And they're going to wave it off. But it's not going to be in the first. It'll be in the second or the third, right?
Yeah. I see a Loader round three at like plus 1,700. Not where you play.
Oh, I'm in on that. Yeah, oh, not where I play.
No, they don't give you very good prop.
No, they're a little wiser.
So I'll probably, I'm only human. I'll probably play something like that. But I'll have Loader. I'm just watching the market, watching where that number goes. I think he was like plus 145 the other day. It's always been Loader for me. There's been a little bit of buyback. But yeah, he was as high as plus 155 as of a few days ago, or about 5 days ago. On the weekend, yeah, plus 130. So it's moving back up. I'm just kind of monitoring that. Move back up to plus 120. Maybe we get like plus 140, something like that. Like I'll be in on Loader this week. Moving on down, we got Nurullo Aliyev taking on Shamrock. Aliyev a minus 275 favorite to come back on Rock, plus 235. Doing a bunch of regional stuff this year, became pretty familiar with what Rock is up to, breaking down the Octagon promotion. I was watching his fight against Attila Korkmaz, who's like more or less like a striker. There are some big kind of problems for him, considering like Korkmaz is not exactly a grappler by any stretch of the imagination. Korkmaz is able to like do like a hip toss, get him to the ground, able to control him early in round one there. I don't like what Aliyev has done in his early part of his UFC career. It's been very boring type of, grappling approach, hanging out in guard. He had a point deducted against Rafael Alves, which turned that into a majority decision. But all he's got to do in this fight, like Shamrock, I don't think he's got some submissions on his record, but like I don't think he's an elite submission specialist. I don't think his striking's all that special by any stretch of the imagination either. I don't know what to make of Nurullo Aliyev moving forward after this fight, but I think you get takedowns, you hold position, and maybe in this part of the world they give you a bit of a longer leash that you're not staying too active on top. You just rack up control time, boring decision. Nurullo Aliyev is how I see this fight playing out. Not a great stylistic matchup, in my humble opinion, for Shamrock. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. If this fight was taking place in the UK, and it was all while the fans will be behind Shamrock, and he may be landing a little bit more, yeah, maybe it gets dicey. But no, man, if we're just talking about control time, and Aliyev probably being the fan favorite over in this part of the world, this guy does exactly what you'd want a guy to do. Takes zero risks, does nothing, racks up control time, man. He looked good in the contender series against Josh Wick, but since then, Paul mentioned that Rafael Alves fight. He did three takedowns on four attempts. He doesn't have to shoot 20 attempts to get you down. He's very physically strong. He's Tajikistan. What do you expect? But when he gets you down, 10 minutes and 51 seconds of control time. That's all it is control time. Loses a point. It's a majority. But if you look at the round by round, he shuts down Alves in two of the rounds. Alves lands basically nothing. Against Joe Selecki, it's the same thing. Joe Selecki is a BJJ black belt, and he's actually a good competition black belt. Aliyev goes 2-for-2 on takedowns with 8 minutes and 13 seconds of control time. That ability to just get a takedown and then hold you down, and you're not getting back up, you're not scrambling, you're not doing anything. He doesn't have to land big ground and pound. He doesn't have to submit you. He just staples you to the mat. Now, what I will say is, he fights Rafael Alves. He doesn't do nothing. But then there's a two-year gap between that fight and the Joe Selecki fight. Comes back, two-year-long layoff. He fights exactly the same way. This guy is only 24 years old, man. So it's not as if he's regressing. If anything, he's adding other skills to his game. He's physically strong. He's going to be getting even stronger as a couple of these years continue to go by. His grappling game, if he's shutting down black belts like Alves and Joe Selecki with very little issue, then that's going to be his game. The UFC don't love it. The UFC would love to get rid of a guy like this who's a non-action guy. But if you can't do anything about it, just like Jack Maddalena this past weekend, I'm watching it with a bunch of people and they're upset and this isn't fighting and this is what we paid for. It's like, dog, this is fighting. You can't wrestle. You can't fight. It's the bottom line. When I look at Shakeem Rock, he's got 14 pro fights, Paul. 11 of his 14 pro fights have ended in the first round. He's just a one-round guy. That's about it. The longer they go, I don't think he's a good grappler. I don't think he's got good cardio. He fights with his hands by his hips. He's kind of low-ish volume. He doesn't have huge power despite having all these quick first-round finishes. He's fought a lower level. And then, yeah, you mentioned that the last fight against Attila Cormax, Cormax hits him with a foot sweep and gets on top of him. What the hell do you think is going to happen when Aliyev gets you down? Now, the key difference is Cormax is a striker. He's a southpaw himself. He's got a nice overhand. He wants to strike. So he takes Rock down, but Rock can get back up. Aliyev takes you down. You don't get back up. Better guys than you have tried, and they've not gotten anywhere with it. So you got a 32-year-old British prospect debuting in the UFC. He's 32. I don't think he's one of the top prospects outside of the organization. I don't think he's one of the top prospects in the UK. I don't think he's really all that good at all. He's got a brother who's okay. I'm struggling to really see how he wins this fight other than Aliyev takes him down and doesn't do anything and the judges go with damage over control time. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to say, yeah, one guy was on top of the other guy for 13 minutes and the other guy looked tired and helpless the entire time. So, yeah, I think Aliyev makes this thing look real good. Do I have to top ticket a guy like Aliyev? I'd rather not. I'd rather not. But again, I think he should win this thing pretty straightforward. And he's, you know, he's less than a 5-1 favorite. So taking consideration the main event, Armin Sarukian, he's a 5-1 favorite. Yeah, I like Aliyev more than I like Sarukian, if we're being honest. Hooker's got a path to victory in 5 rounds to work with. And Shamrock, you going to finish him in the first round? Okay, well, if you don't, you're in trouble. And are you going to finish him in the first round? I don't know. He's never been beaten before, so good luck with that too. Mm-hmm. I think I got Aliyev here. Hopefully it goes as easy as it is in my mind because this thing should just be extremely uneventful and boring, but 30-27, and that's all I want.
100%. Yeah, no, I was like, you know, I like betting underdogs, but just like as soon as I watch Cork Mods, I'm like, well, that's considering this stylistic matchup, I'm like, this doesn't bode well for you, Shamrock. They're not giving you an easy Shem and Luke, they didn't have to go through the the contender series way to get this promotion. So like the UFC, because I guess these guys have like fan followings, it's like they're giving them some pretty tough matchups coming in here. It's just like, you're not just gonna come over here and just steamroll everybody.
You know, my theory is that this is like the hidden episode of the contender series, because you're right, those guys kind of got to jump right in. But we'll talk about the very first fight on the card, and it's essentially a contender series fight. It's a canceled fight. Denzel Freeman's replacing this Jose Luis. Why was that guy on the roster anyways? I don't know. Where did they get these guys? They need heavyweights, I guess. We got one fight to talk about before then, but it feels like there's a few prospects that maybe could have gone in the contender series, didn't get used, and now they're just getting thrown on this Qatar fight card.
Yeah. This next fight is very, very puzzling for me. We got Sagid Igakamayev. I butchered that one.
Izagakmayev.
Taking on Nicholas Dalby. Sagid is a minus 315 favorite to come back on Dalby, plus 265. So the question marks, one, you know, the last like 3 years, the only thing Sagid has done is he went on Karate Combat, got a really nice armbar finish. I was rewatching that earlier today.
Pulled guard though. I don't know what's that about.
He pulled guard, but it was a grappling match.
But
against the UAE Warriors champion, Kotem Boynazarov, who's a pretty freaking good fighter. So getting that armbar, but then went over Karate Combat with like their financial troubles. You start wondering, like, was that rigged? Or were we just collecting paychecks? I don't know. You always have to take that with a grain of salt. And otherwise, it's just like, you haven't fought in 3 years. The James Nakashima fight, like, he looked pretty dominant there. Carlston Harris games are subbing you. Like this guy's a big old question mark for me. Like he could come out here, absolutely dominate Dalby, or Dalby could just be a little bit too much. Cause like, it ain't easy going out there. Jesse Ronson, that was a club and sub. And then Jesse Ronson ended up,
popping
for steroids. Other than that, it's just like the grappling's usually been on point for Dalby. Cardio is always on point for Dalby. Do you trust Dalby this week, or are you back in the Russian? Where are you at?
Yeah, I'm back in the Russian. Probably just falling into the trap, sure. But Dalby looked washed to me his last time out against Randy Brown. Mm-hmm. Like, he's 41 years old now. He's taken a bunch of damage, and you're right. He hadn't been finished. One guy tests positive for steroids on a club and sub, but he's been really durable. And then that last fight, Randy Brown, I get it. He had a knockdown of his own, but he looked tired. He looked slow. A couple of these shots that would sneak through would just really cause him to just lose his equilibrium. I feel like he's probably trained hard. He's got a recovery story that he was a full-blown alcoholic and his body start shutting down on him, got cut from the UFC, got sober, worked his way back into the organization. But at some point, you know, he's had a whole lot of wear and tear. The other bigger problem is that when you look at him, Renat Fakhradinov with the 5 takedowns, Gabriel Bomfiend, 3 takedowns, Muslim Salikov, I didn't know he really took down anybody, but he took him down twice. Worley Alves took him down once. Claudio Silva, you know him, my most hated fighter of all times. Claudio Silva took him down 4 times. How's that even possible? But really, that is the path of victory here. I think you try to take this guy down. If you want to stand in the pocket and you want to trade, yeah, he's had good durability historically. He's had good cardio in the past. He's got an ability to fight his way into fights and get back into them. But really, the older you get, it's like those comebacks become few and far between. The cardio and the durability, it starts to diminish. And then at that point, you know, he's fair game. Saigita is a Gakmaev. He began training with Khabib and Khabib's father when he was 12 years old. He's been a member of the camp for 15 plus years. That is his style. When you watch these fights in one championship, Nakashima, he's good. Takes him down, nice sub. The Lepang Zhang fight, he kind of just went through the motions, but easy takedowns in all 3 rounds and holds him down. Shin Yaoki, you see beautiful right hand. Guy's big for the weight class. Guy fights long. And of course, father's plan, he will get to that wrestling. Why he's been off the last 3 years? Well, partly because he's trapped in this one championship contract where they got nobody to offer him and they don't want to pay him the money. So he sit on the sidelines and now you got to wait till you get out of your contract. And then this takes a while. Then you do get out of your contract. And which organizations want to sign you and which organizations have the kind of money that they can, one, sign you and pay you, but also keep you active. And so you're not doing anything. And I don't look at 3-year-long layoff. His body's broken down. He's at the end of the road. He's looking to do something else.
He's got time left on the shelf. It is good to see him come back against the grappling match was credible or not. At least he came back and got an easy finish against a very, very tough opponent.
Yeah, and it's just when you look at his body of work, Carlson Harris does have a nasty Dars on him. I give him that. And then this Elias Silvero fight, this is back in the day in Russia. It's like, you know, crafty Brazilian have been known to give these Russian guys troubles from time to time. It's not like he's unbeatable, but really, he can strike. He can wrestle. He's very well-rounded. You watch back his last technical MMA fight with Shin Yaoki, which is now 3 years ago. You watch back that fight 3 years ago. Islam Makhachev is his chief corner man, right? Like, he's in. And you know that he's probably going to attempt to take down Nicholas Dalby. Why? Because how does Dalby win? When you punch and kick with him in the pocket, how does he lose? Yeah, a lot of guys have taken him down. And as long as you don't gas, you'll be able to do that for 2 of the 3 rounds. Even his fight with Renat Fakhradinov, a lot of people said, well, I thought he won that fight. Yeah, but he didn't win that fight because he got taken down 5 times and the judges went with that instead of the damage overall. So you put that all in
this part of the world.
That was my last point. You put all of that in Qatar where Makhachev may be with them and Habib's going to be with them and the Muslim Brotherhood is all going to be there in full force for their guy. And he takes his opponent down and he holds him down and he lands some decent shots. Even if Dalby gets some momentum going and lands a few shots, it's going to be crickets. Isn't this like the second fight on the card or something? Potentially, yeah. We don't really know the official bout order, but
I'm not sure about
Rich Sheiks are the only people that are going to be in the building for this fight. And believe you me, they're not going to be booing Sagi. So no stand-ups, no momentum swing. Dalby feeds off the crowd and the energy and holy crap, I'm making a comeback. That's not going to be here for him. The only thing that really is going in Dalby's favor is I don't think you can drink in Qatar. I'm kidding. He's sober. He's not been a drunk for a long time. I like Dalby. Big fan of his work. Good comeback story. Always gives you 100% everything he's got. Fighting a guy that's been on for 3 years, it sounds tempting. that last fight with Dolby, you really saw the cracks on the wall. Like, being an all-action guy, come forward, take damage, give it to you, it's only going to last for so long. And at 41 years old, the end is kind of starting to get near for Nicholas Dolby, whereas Sagitt is 10 years younger than him. I don't care about a three-year-long layoff. He's 10 years younger than him. You tell me whose body's in better shape. I'm thinking the Russian. So, yeah, give me Isagakmayev, who I'm actually excited to see debut in the UFC. If he looks good in this fight, why couldn't he have a continued successful run?
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, Dolby's older than me. That's not going to bode well. It's not going to bode well, and it's a young man's game, right? And this isn't heavyweight. You know, you can be a little bit older at heavyweight because power is the last thing to leave you. But, okay, finally, we've got Merrick Beliveau taking on Denzel Freeman. Freeman's about a minus 200 favorite. The comeback on Beliveau is plus 170. Freeman's like a Greco-Roman wrestling standout of sorts. He was the LFA champion. Is that Isaiah Pinson fight not a great look for him? But I've generally enjoyed watching his body of work as over the course of the year. Taped him a few times for different regional cards and stuff like that. I think he's pretty solid. The thing with the Boyo guy that I struggle with is like, pretty much all of his wins that I've seen, just like, he gets the takedown, he gets on top, he gets to mount, and he pounds guys out. It's like, I think he's running into a different beast now going up against Freeman. But, you know, minus 200, UFC heavyweight making his debut. I suppose the short notice for Merrick makes me feel a little bit better, but Freeman's the side for me. Here, I just don't think that what I've seen from Beliveau, like, the stand-up looked pretty rudimentary, and he wants to get that wrestling going. I struggled to see him doing that to Denzel Freeman. So give me the better wrestler in my mind in Denzel Freeman. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, that's basically it. Denzel Freeman is Gable Stevenson light. You know, he went through wrestling and he wrestled for the Army, and he actually had a pretty decorated kind of college career, and he tried to qualify for the national team, and then he switched out and decided, hey, I'm gonna be a pro wrestler. Wrestled very briefly in WWE developmental as Luke Fox, and then phased out, didn't quite make it, then decides, hey, I'm gonna pick up MMA. But you see, the guy's pretty good athlete, and he's got some solid wrestling. If they can just add the other skills to his game, then, you know, he could potentially be okay. At 34 years old, I don't think that he's going to be getting marginally better, but he doesn't have a ton of fight experience, so yeah, he'll be making improvements. And two, as Paul mentioned earlier, 34 at heavyweight, that's not a death sentence. I mean, he's still going to be there to use some speed and add some new tools to his game. His fight with Isaiah Pinson, although not the greatest look, he was, you know, 4-0. He's still young in his career. It's those last two against Asplund and Hugo Cunha. He just uses his wrestling. Good hip tosses, good ability to just control in the pommel in the clinch. You know, gets a quick little trip, takes you down, gets on top of you. He's training into Colorado Springs at Pound for Pound. He's got guys like Justin Houghton as a striking coach. His cardio is pretty good. And when you watch interviews on him and they say, you know, what's your biggest asset? Your wrestling. He claims it's his cardio. He says, I weaponize my cardio by taking these guys into deeper waters. So the thing with Merrick Beliveau, it's everything that Paul's saying is that, yeah, it looks like he's needs the takedown of his own. In fact, he's a BJJ black belt. He likes to take his opponent down, get on top, and he finishes them. But one, the level of guys he's fighting is abysmal. And so taking them down is one thing. Taking down an All-American wrestler like Denzel Freeman is going to be infinitely tougher. Second of all, is that all of his pro wins have happened in the very first round. So if Denzel Freeman, a guy that, again, trains in Colorado Springs at altitude, if he gets you out of the first round, you're more likely to fall apart than he is. He's trained for 5-round fights because he's the LFA champ. You've never been outside of the first round. In fact, you've never been outside of the first 2 minutes of a fight. Mm-hmm. And there's the other thing. He's had one pro fight. This is the Polish guy, Merrick. He had one pro fight in 2021. He takes 3 years off just doing jiu-jitsu. Well, and then he comes back to MMA. He's only been competing really since 2024. He's basically fought five times in the last year and a half. And now you're jumping into the UFC. Like, it seems like a bit of a stretch. Now, they initially matched him up with this Jose Luiz, this 6-1 Brazilian guy. And I have no possible idea why that guy would have been getting a shot as well. It makes zero sense to me. That guy pulls out, Denzel Freeman comes in. Well, Denzel Freeman's actually the LFA champ. Denzel Freeman's actually got a little bit of hype in terms of heavyweight regional scene prospects. And yeah, he's got a viable path of victory here, which is one, sprawl and brawl. Just don't let this guy take you down. Maybe you can outstrike him. You're not a great striker, but really he isn't either. So just sprawl and brawl. And then for whatever reason, it's like, ooh, you know what? I don't want to strike with him. Take him down. Yeah, he's a black belt, but this is heavyweight MMA, dude. You just get on top of the guy and you start punching him in the face. Is he going to throw up a triangle choke? Is he going to throw up an armbar or scramble up to his feet fast? Like, no, man. Get on top of this guy and smash him in the face with a few elbows. That's it. After the first 2 minutes pass, it's like, oh, I've never been past first 2 minutes in my career. Freeman has. Freeman's got more experience. Freeman's got a better skill set. Freeman should win this fight. I'm a little bit worried he's short notice flying all the way to Qatar, but I think he's got a bit of money. I think he's got a bit of sponsorship behind him. I think that they're going to put him in the right position to succeed. Yeah, this seems like a winnable fight. For whatever reason, you can't go too high on it because it's got this aura of stench that's just like circulating around it like a dirty stink cloud. If it was a cartoon, you'd see the stink rays. And I'm willing to eat the shit on it and take me some Denzel Freeman. So that's the angle I'm going with, Paul.
Yes, sir. All right. We are just about out of time codes. But before we go, why don't you hit him with the PRP?
This week, we're going with Arman Tsarukyan, Ian Gary Machado. It's just Ian Gary. I hate that they put the Machado. Anyways, Tsarukyan, Machado. Oh, I did it again. Tsarukyan, Ian Gary. Then we're going Volkan Uzdemir, Jack Hermanson's dog number one. Shamil Gaziev, Alex Perez, dog number two. I'm going to take Luke Riley. I'm going to take Abdul Rahman Yankaev. I'm going to take Kyoji Horiguchi, dog number three. I'm going to take Alexander Topuria. That one's like basically near money. Ryan Loader, dog number four. And then Nurulo Aliyev, staple him to the mat. Seigi Izagakmaev, staple him to the mat. Denzel Freeman, staple him for the mat until he gasses out. And then Freeman will take him out. I got four underdogs, and they're good plus money underdogs. Could you stretch on a Bogdan grad? Could you stretch on a Dan Hooker? That's entirely up to you guys. That is. But I'm going to go with the four that I like the most and then hope that the rest of the favorites do their thing and roll in Qatar.
We're pretty much on the same page with those four underdogs too. In order, my favorite four underdogs are Kyoji plus 170, Hermanson plus 200 and up, Perez, and then Loader. Loader, I just, because of his chin, his durability, that's my.
I feel like Loader is the dog I like the most, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
And we will see what happens. Anyway, that is it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For Cody, I'm Paul. Saying goodbye. And good luck.